Sunday, October 14th, 2012. And this is the fourth class in the fall series on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Is there somebody who would like to read exercise 16? Sam, do you have your book there? You want to read it?
Exercise 16, discriminative investigation. When the factor of awakening and investigation of phenomena is present in him, he is aware. Investigation of phenomena is present in me. He is aware when not yet born investigation of phenomena is being born, and when already born investigation of phenomena is perfectly developed.
Okay. So, as I said, investigation of phenomenon is one of the seven factors of awakening that we'll talk about later on in two classes from now. So this begins the category of the objects of mind. Mindfulness of the objects of mind, the fourth category. So we want to talk a little bit about what that means, first of all. Lately, I don't know about you, but I've been kind of watching my mind. And sometimes what comes up is how it doesn't quite operate the same way that it used to. It's not quite as sharp. You know, there's like synapses that aren't firing as fast or as many as they used to, and I'm forgetting things. And it's just, it's very interesting to watch that process. And if I can bring my observer self to that, again, it gives me a lot more equanimity. It gives me a lot more freedom to just notice instead of going into judgment. You know, where did I put those earrings? Were my favorite earrings, and now they're, you know, how could I have lost a pair of earrings? Anyway, or and then fear of anticipating the future. You know, well, maybe this is really dementia, you know, maybe this is, you know. And instead, just be where I am in the moment. Oh, now I'm a person who sometimes is of the nature to go to the grower's market, come home, and leave the vegetables in the car. I have been known to do that. I never was that kind of person before, but now I'm more aware that I have the tendency to do that. So I can be more aware. I can be more mindful. There's a driving meditation that we have that suggests that when you sit in the car about to go somewhere, you say your own little gata, whatever it is. But it's about how you know that you and the car are one at that point, and that when you go, when the car goes fast, you're going fast. And you also kind of say, okay, now this is where I'm going. So you remember, I'm going here, and then I'm going here, and then I'm going here. And you just, it's like setting an intention. It's like being clear. And so now I'm going to do that when I come home from the market. I'm coming home from the market with vegetables, and I'm going to bring them in the house, you know. So just watching and becoming more mindful of the places where we tend to be forgetful. We leave lights on, or we lose our keys, or whatever it is we do. There are little places where we have an opportunity to bring the practice of mindfulness in. And then if feelings do come up of judgment of ourselves, of criticism of ourselves, of fear, then, of course, we know our practice is to be aware of that, that that becomes our meditation object. You know? And we can always use the mantra that Thay gives us, are you sure? If we start running away with more than just, I left the vegetables in the car, it's like, oh no, I'm going down the road too, you know. Can't even live independently anymore, I'm so forgetful, you know. So anyway. So I think that mindfulness also really heightens the ability to work with these changes that are inevitable. You know, if we're lucky, they'll start in old age, you know. But they could happen any time, you know. anything could impair certain abilities that we take for granted now. So being grateful, being aware of how we can function, and being aware of our limitations, of kind of the weak places in our ability to function, you know, could be our bodies, could be our brains, whatever, is a way of taking good care of ourselves. So like Robert just said, you know, energy flows where attention goes. So if we give our kind attention to that place, it doesn't have to be just, you know, the road downhill. It can be an investigation. It can be a gift, an awakening, of an opportunity to become more mindful. So what does mindfulness of the objects of mind mean? This is something I kind of went round and round and round with. And I finally came to the understanding that I was going round and round and round because there are several different names for it. Some people call it the categories of phenomena. Some people call it the world, mindfulness of everything, of the world. And it's also called mindfulness of the dharmas with a small d. The word dharma has a whole lot of different meanings. With the small d, dharma means everything that that's manifested. And it also means the natural laws, you know, the way the world works naturally, which to me is what the Buddha's explaining to us, how the world works. And so he's mapping it out for us so that, you know, to me, he's saying, if you can understand how the world works and be in harmony with it, you're going to be way happier. Because between you and the way the world works, you're not going to win if there's a fight there, you know. And so to be relaxed and be in harmony with the way the world works, that's the road to happiness. But we have to know what that is. We have to parse out how does the world really work. So this class and the next week's class are going to be really kind of focusing on mindfulness of the objects of mind. And they could be a little dense because this is really the deep, meaty part of this teaching that the Buddha gives. And it's important to know that wherever you are in your level of understanding, that's perfect for you. I know there's probably several of us in this room who have read one of Thay's books or another Buddhist book, and we've read it, and then we go back and read it again a year later, and there's a whole lot more there. How did that get there? You know, our understanding has deepened, and so we get a lot more from it. I mean, I've read some books that I thought, I've got about 15% of what's here, you know. And then I go back and, you know, little by little, it works on you as you just kind of stay with it over time. So wherever you are in terms of what you grasp and what you understand is just right for you right now. And it does go in. We have a thing called Dharma Rain, which is that the teaching goes into the cells of your body, kind of like rain falling on you. It's not just going in through your mind, through your brain. It's going in to all the cells of your body, and then it works on you, you know, if you are open to it. So I was trying to think about what the Buddha was singling out in this category, this fourth category of mindfulness of the objects of mind, and I came up with three things. First of all, Alan Wallace said, he calls it the close application of mindfulness. The fourth close application of mindfulness is the grand finale, all-inclusive mindfulness. So he says that in the first three, we were focusing on the body in the first one, we were focusing on feelings in the second one, and we were focusing on our mind states, our thoughts. In the third one, this one is everything. Everything, whatever is in your awareness, that becomes the object of your meditation. So it's wide open. It's also a reason that's finally making sense to me why, in practicing with this aspect of the of this teaching, it's good to experiment at least with meditating with your eyes open. I have, you know, tried to do that. You know, 30 plus years of meditating with my eyes closed, it was like it was very hard for me to do. And so, you know, if I couldn't do it, I couldn't do it. Now, finally, gradually, I'm actually finding the impulse sometimes to sit with my eyes open, you know, just you're just vacant, not focusing on anything. But it does kind of confront my idea that I'm in there. My consciousness is in there, you know, that's me. And if I want to access it, that's what I need to do. So it does help sometimes to block out, you know, often if you have busy discursive thoughts like I usually do, closing your eyes can cut down on the stimulation, you know. And so it's useful to do with your eyes closed. But in this particular aspect of the practice, you might want to do, we're going to have do a couple of meditations, and you try doing it with your eyes open and just see what happens. So the second aspect of this this category is that the mindfulness of dharmas refers to the patterns of manifestation. You know, the Buddha was showing us all these patterns. And this is what we'll do near the end, is go through some of these patterns that we've already, some of them like the five aggregates, the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path. You know, these, I always learned that these were mnemonics. Is it a fire alarm? Intercom? Oh, okay. So I always thought of these as mnemonics because this was an oral tradition for 500 years after the Buddha lived, and it was a way to remember his teachings, you know, and that's true. But they're also referring to patterns. Would someone like to see if there's anything upstairs going on, if there's a fire or something? Never had this happen before. Oh, I never didn't know they had a doorbell. I think someone made that up, that was a doorbell. Thank you. Okay. So, are we ready? So these patterns, you know, we see them everywhere. We know the simple cycles of life, you know, the cycle of the seasons we're really aware of right now, since we're in this really very clear change. And you know, it's wonderful because we can take delight in the changing of the seasons because we know that this is a cycle and that it comes round and round. And we know that eventually, you know, we wake up in the morning and eventually it's going to get dark again. And we know that it's after the darkness, it's going to get light again. So it's fine. It's wonderful to have the light and it's wonderful to have the dark. But if we didn't know, you know, if we didn't know that the light came after the dark, it might be very frightening when the dark came. And if we saw all the plants dying around us, it might be very frightening if we didn't know that in spring they come back up. So this is pattern recognition. You know, this can be really helpful to us when we can get familiar and comfortable with the patterns of life. They aren't things that the Buddha made up, and they aren't these magical things that only he found, but he just had a way of putting it out very clearly, and so that we can be comfortable with the things that we oftentimes don't want to face for some reason or another, like, for example, impermanence. No. So it's like continuing to go to bring into our awareness the cycle of impermanence. No. And the practice of mindfulness uncovers not only the patterns in our world, but the patterns in our individual consciousness as well. And they become revealed through our body, our emotions, our thoughts, our mind states, our dreams. You know? So the Buddha gave us this map of our minds as well. And then the third aspect, which is really part of the second that I've already talked about, there's the pattern recognition, and then there's these categories, the organizing principles that the Buddha used to express the teachings of these patterns. And as I said, later on we'll go through some of these, not in great detail, but we will go through some of them to see how to weave them into our understanding of how the world works and how our minds work. So the purpose of categorizing reality, because you might think that that's kind of a strange thing to do, a limiting thing to do, but it's actually to untangle our confusion, you know, by increasing our clarity. Confusion means fusing together. So we act as if our superimposed feelings are intrinsic to an object. You know, we have an experience, and we are used to having a certain feeling that goes with that experience, and so we believe that the experience and the feeling are the same, when really they're not. They're fused together, so we need to untangle, you know, separate out the things that aren't really necessarily fused together. And so that's the process of the mindfulness of objects of mind, of practicing with the objects of mind. We learn to untie the knots. You know, we'll be talking about fetters. Fetters are these tangled up knots. And so we learn to untie the knots that have been, you know, growing in us from our misperceptions, from our fears and our wounds, and our identifying with feelings and thoughts that aren't necessarily, they're valid, but they're not necessarily universal. They're not necessarily always true. So next week we're going to talk about fetters in great detail. That this week we're just going to sort of touch on it. So everything that occurs to you occurs in your mind. Everything that happens to you, you observe everything with your mind, that with your cognition, with your consciousness. That's how you experience the world. Mind denotes both the domain in which the mental events take place and the awareness that observes these events. So it's possible to become aware of our awareness. So what is missing from the scientific study of the mind is a rigorous means of observing the subjective reality of the mind itself, as well as a clear definition of consciousness, which the Buddha will offer us a little later on. So our tool, as we've used from the very beginning of the class, is awareness of our breathing. That's the tool that brings us home. And the purpose of training our minds in the awareness of our breathing is so that we become discerning. We become alert to the subtleties of our breath. And then we can address the subtlety of our feelings and our perceptions and our thoughts and our stories. So it's the same. We start with our breath, and as we become more aware and more focused, then we take that same awareness and that same focus to awareness of our feelings, our perceptions, our thoughts, and our world. And then we have the choice to choose the more wholesome thoughts, feelings, stories, and let go of the unwholesome. So we're going to do a meditation practicing observing both the contents and the space of our mind. Okay. And so I would suggest try doing this with your eyes open, just kind of resting your focus vacantly in front of you. And this is a big challenge that we're doing here, because in observing both the contents and the space of our mind, what we're doing is we're confronting the false view that we have that we're the center of the universe. So you can remember back to what happened to poor Galileo. So we're really kind of rocking our world here. It's quite revolutionary to even sort of think about the possibility, contemplate, or be open to the possibility that we aren't the center. Okay, so let's begin with one sound of the bell and just settle in and follow our breathing. And as you follow your breath in and out, become aware of tactile sensations. Perhaps the feeling of your feet on the carpet, or whatever in touch with whatever tactile sensations come to you. And then direct your awareness to the space of the mind and whatever arises in your mind, thoughts or feelings that come up, just observe them. Without any grasping or getting stuck in them, just watch them. And now shift your focus from the foreground to the background. Pay attention to the spacious intervals between your thoughts. Observe the space from which mental events arise, in which they are present, and into which they dissolve. Just focus on the background space and rest there as much as possible. So this is a wonderful meditation to do where you really have big space, like to do outdoors. If you are in the desert or do on one of our mountains or at the ocean, you know, to just be somewhere where there's really big space, and then practice it being connected with your breathing. And be aware of, distinguish between the space and the contents of the space. So if you're focusing on the mountaintop in the distance, you know, the form and the color of something, that's the contents of the space. When you're just focusing on the space, try that. And the awareness or the contemplation could come that you are, where are you? You know, you really kind of get lost in this vastness of space, and also that you are all of it. You know? So that's a really wonderful thing to do if you have the opportunity. I had a request from someone that I think was a really excellent suggestion, that during class we take a little break in the middle of class for our bodies. So we're just going to have like a 1 or 2 minute stretching break to just do. You can stay seated if you want, but if you want to get up and stretch, I hope it's not a whole chain of people going to the bathroom, because we don't want to spend too long, but just a little body movement. You want to do a new.
Hold it and push it back halfway down.
Do you want to do a new folder now?
I don't know. Do you want a new folder?
Yeah, I guess you could.
Okay.
Unless you're nervous about that, and then you could just do this. Yeah. Okay. Let's do a new folder. We could do a new folder. I don't know if it'd be helpful or